Okay, boys and girls, how's everybody out there doing? Well, we're going to try and get a fishing update in with Captain Danny Latham. Yes, indeedy. It's Thursday, and a lot of stuff's been going on. We're going to try and get all that figured out, sorted out, and see what the hell happens. Anyway, all right, enough of that. Good morning, Dan. Afternoon, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Afternoon, Frankie. What's up, buddy?
Oh, man. Watching everything. You know, we've had a lot of rain here.
Oh, yeah.
And they've had a lot of rain in Texas and all the flooding and everything. Do you know, one of the captains actually, and he fishes out in the Gulf. It's deep sea fishing, grouper, snapper, and all that kind of stuff. Actually, the guy canceled the charter because they were afraid the water level in the Gulf had risen to an unsafe level. He couldn't talk them out of it. They were convinced of this. They were from a city up in the Northeast. We're not going to say which one because no city wants that on their shoulder.
Doesn't matter. You can't fix stupid, bud.
I mean, literally, they said because of all the rains and, Hurricane Harvey and all the flooding in Florida, that they didn't want to be in the Gulf because they said it was probably at an unsafe level. Now, if you're out there, and let's say you could, by some magical thing, separate the Gulf of Mexico from the Caribbean Ocean, from the Atlantic, from the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, and all of the world's oceans are connected. They're just one body of water. We call them different things, but they're all the exact same thing. Let's say you could magically raise the level of the Gulf of Mexico up 15 feet. So instead of fishing in 90 feet of water, you're fishing in 105 feet of water. Would this make it more unsafe?
Nope. Wouldn't change a thing, bud.
I literally have no conception of why they would think that rain, first of all, could, or that it would even be possible, rain would actually lower the level of the Gulf. Because the water comes from the Gulf, so the rainwater would actually lower the level of the Gulf, not increase it.
Beats me, man. All the rain we've got hasn't even increased the level of the harbor, so...
It's impossible to increase the level of the harbor with rain.
Which is connected to, the Gulf.
The Gulf, which is connected to the rest of the world.
Right.
So. We would actually have to have 20 inches of rain an hour for, I would say, 3 or 4 hours over most of Southwest Florida to raise the level of the harbor.
Yeah, to where it would raise any
in
right,
the harbor at all.
Yeah, without a wind push. The water will raise with a southwest wind or a hurricane or something, but just pure rain.
But that's push.
Yeah,
The water can either be taken out by the wind or added in by the wind. But
exactly.
With actual rainfall, because we had 18 inches of rain in an hour, we had massive flooding. I mean, it was just everywhere. You remember the flood.
Oh, yeah.
And the harbor didn't go up at all. It doesn't...
Harbor's a big place.
Yeah.
It just all runs out.
So, anyway, now that we've started off on this wonderful, magical mystery tour of, are you freaking kidding me? I mean, I had to talk about it. I mean, I actually wrote a piece about it.
I've heard a lot of things
over
the years, but that's not one of them.
You know, and I almost think it's kind of dangerous for people to have that much of a fantasy view of the world, like fantasy of the way animals are, like the fish and the oysters are having little tea parties underwater with seahorses,
It's Disney for you, bud.
I mean, this is a dangerous way for people to live.
Oh.
It really is.
Oh,
you know, let's not kill any cows. Let's just go to McDonald's where no animals have to die for us to get food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. I had a guy, actually. Yeah. I had a guy come up at the boat ramp yelling at me for killing the poor creatures while I was filleting a fish with my clients. So I stopped and I said, "Do you eat meat?" "Well, I don't see where that has to do with anything." I'm like, "Do you eat meat?" And he goes, "Well, yeah." I go, "So you're telling me somebody like me had to kill that for you so you could eat it."
So I try and tell people the best way to live clean is with a little blood on your hands. Because if you don't have any blood on your hands, you don't know how your food is being prepared. You don't know where it comes from, which is a good thing. I don't want to know where my food comes from. I have been to many, processing plants, yeah, and stuff like that. And, you know, and I've helped with animals, you know, slaughtering animals for food and all the rest of this stuff. Everything from pigs and you name the farm animal, I've been involved in it. But when you go out and you capture, kill, clean, and cook your own food, there is no waste bycatch from it. You live, the ideal way to live clean is to live no waste, to waste as little as humanly possible. And that, to me, is the cleanest way to live. And sometimes the best way to do that, if I have a little blood on my hands because I'm killing or sacrificing an animal so I can live, that animal was out killing another creature so it could live. This is the food chain.
It's part of the food chain.
I'm very happy I'm at the top of it.
Yeah. For me personally, there is not one piece of frozen anything in my freezer as far as fish. If I want to eat fish, I keep enough for a meal, and that's what I go eat usually that night or the very next day. And then if I want to
eat fish, I'm not quite as good as you. I have like one fish dinner in the freezer or two in case somebody comes over.
Which is absolutely fine. My point is that loading the freezer up thing and just letting it go bad is kind of stupid. Because the freezer will ruin fish. You know that. I don't care if you vacuum pack it. I don't care what you do to it.
I will say, though, we're fairly lucky. You know, if I was living, let's say, in the middle of Iowa, which is a beautiful place. I've been there several times. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly like you have access to the fish in the Gulf.
Oh, absolutely not.
So I can understand them taking a little cooler so they can go back and enjoy it multiple times. But we live here. If I want a fish, I should be able to go out here, catch a fish, and have a fish dinner.
Right, especially right now.
Yeah.
This time of year is my favorite time of year to fish. And a lot of it is because we have so many snapper inshore.
The snapper fishing's really getting better?
Oh, it's been great.
I think it's been great, except if you're trying to fish up against the mangrove trees, because then the mangrove snappers eat your bait apart before anything else can get to it.
Well, that didn't bother me a bit if they're big mangrove snappers.
They were little ones. I actually had put a storm twitch on. I thought they were pinfish at first.
I actually went and fished an island about, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago, one of those real high tides, maybe a month ago. It's been a while. And there were so many, like, I'm talking good snapper, like 12 to 14 inches.
Nice fish.
Right. Like, let me put it this way. You would get broke off if you weren't careful.
Yeah. I don't like them much over 14. I think they get a little, it's one of the few fish I prefer smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, for what I do, I really don't catch a lot of those 5-pounders inshore.
Yeah.
You know, if I go offshore, I
like
catch them.
You know, snook, I think the bigger they are, the better the meat taste. Goliath grouper, I'm the same way. Even sharks, although I won't keep a shark bigger than my cooler. But mangrove snapper is literally the only fish I know of that I like better when they're smaller. 12, 13 inches, 14 is my kind of limit on it.
And your limit's 5. You know, let's say I got two guys and we keep 10, you know, 12 to 14 inch snapper. That's a bunch of meat, man.
Oh, yeah.
People don't realize, I mean, it's a little snapper. Yeah. It's a bunch of meat. It adds up real quick.
It's not like the percentage on a redfish.
Right.
Redfish is probably the worst percentage meat of almost any of the fish I know out there.
The way people clean it, too. I'll tell you what, because their spine's so daggum big that when you just
and their
let the
head.
Well, when you let the knife ride down the spine, you know, just ride right down the spine, you miss. I mean, by the time you get done, you got, you know, quarter inch, half inch of meat missing off, you know, combined each side.
Right.
You know, so what I do is I you can read a newspaper through a redfish when I'm done.
Oh, yeah, but
I mean,
you're really good.
Right, I don't miss much, but I agree with you. There's definitely, they got a big head.
Big head, big spine.
Yeah, big head, big spine, you know, take your time cleaning them. And that's the other thing.
If you take a snook and a redfish side by side, you know, for as far as meat,
right.
snook has, I would say, 30% minimum more, maybe 40% more meat than redfish.
At least,
27 versus a 27.
Right, a 27 versus a 27, you're going to get probably at least 30% more out of a snook. I will totally agree with that.
So, what are you using to catch these mangrove snappers?
You know what? I've just been using. There's so much that small weight bait. You do need to clear your quarter inch mesh still. You know, your small mesh net. And I've just been using that. If on the high tides, there's been a ton of them around the islands and stuff to where you can catch a limit. And on the lower tides,
now, are
I'm
you
fishing
moving?
Structure.
Moving like along the shoreline till you find
yeah,
them, or are you anchoring up in likely spots?
Well, for me, I'm anchoring up in likely spots. For the person who really doesn't know, they have to go find the spot. You see what I'm saying? Like my best snapper tree, I found redfish fishing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Because
there's a pocket or a hole underneath that tree.
You
know,
and
the wind was blowing me perfect down the shoreline, and I was just kind of poking down the shoreline, you know, picking my power pole up, drifting, fishing the next little, picking up. And for some reason, which I still have no idea why, this one tree, I mean, I threw a handful of chum up there on it, and all of a sudden, I mean, like 100 of them came up. I was like, huh. And I mean, it's not deep on a high tide. Like, you can't even fish it on low tide. But for some reason, on high tide, they're loving that tree right there.
Well, it could be it holds the right bait.
Yeah, it's holding something.
It's holding something.
You get that. As soon as that tide gets up, I sent my dad there about 3 or 4 days after I found it, and he calls me up at like 9:30 in the morning. He goes, "Your spot sucks. We're done already."
Yeah, I caught my limit. You know?
Yeah,
what am I going to do now?
I'm like, "Yeah, Dad, you really struggled, buddy." You know.
Well, we're going to be doing another show at FWC tomorrow. We did one last week, and because we're kind of talking about limits and random way the show is run, the law reads you allow one snook in your possession.
Mm-hmm.
Possession. That's one. If you have one in your freezer, you're not allowed to take another one until you've consumed that one.
I agree.
That's the law. Now, we are waiting, and this has been the law forever, and it's always been assumed that you could go out and catch a snook and go home, clean it, fillet it, put it in your freezer, and the next day go out and get another snook to take with you. But the letter of the law, the way it was written, interpreted by one of the lieutenants, when he read it, says one in possession, period.
So basically what happens is, let's say you're a dingleberry and you're breaking the law and you've got a whole cooler full of them and you get caught breaking the law. Now they have suspicion, they go to your house and they find them all in your freezer, you're really toasted.
You can get fined for every single fillet in there.
Every single one.
But this is more about the people who do follow the law. The people who are legal, the 80-90% of America who, you know,
absolutely.
Americans as a general rule were very law-abiding to an extent.
Right. 80% of my clients let everything go anyway, believe it or not.
But
I don't have a lot of guys who...
Well, especially if you don't have any way to cook them right away.
Right, exactly. They're here traveling, you know,
right.
and just let them go.
This was kind of a shock for me because I've been telling people wrongly, or so to speak, for years that, you know, you're allowed to keep one per day. But when the law is directly interpreted, it is the possession of one, and letter of the law means that. Now, we're going to be doing a show tomorrow with FWC to get Tallahassee's final word on this.
Right. Well, it's just like, the redfish thing. Before the redfish tournaments, before we knew about the culling thing,
right?
Everybody, man, you threw a 24-incher in your live well. If you caught a 26-incher, you picked the 24-incher up and threw him back and threw the 26-incher in. According to the law, that's illegal, even though the fish is totally alive.
And this, where it goes along, saying we all mostly abide by the law. There are some laws that are a little ridiculous, a little far-fetched.
That would be one of them.
To me, the circle hook law is the dumbest law in history.
Yep.
Circle hooks were invented thousands of years ago. It's one of the very first hooks ever invented designed to catch and kill. It was never designed to catch and let the fish go. It is literally designed to catch and kill the fish. And yet, these are what they want for catch and release. I get no idea how that works out. to me another stupid law. And it's just like with the culling law and everything else. You know, I was working in one country and catch and release was illegal. Now everybody did it. They say, oh, the game warden comes up. I saw you put that fish back. Oh, it had a sore on it. It was not healthy. I wasn't going to eat that. But it kind of goes along with every country has its own ridiculous rules. And in America, we're famous for them. But I can honestly say not as much as some of the countries I've worked in over the years, because I've worked in, I forget how many countries, 10, 15 countries now. But we're not lagging in our stupidity. But going back to the thing, where would you go? Snook season's right around the corner here. I mean, literally tomorrow. So any advice on people for as far as snook fishing? Any areas better than others?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm still catching quite a few fish, you know, down near the passes and all that stuff. You know, Redfish Pass, Captiva Pass, Boca Pass, Little Pass, Stump Pass. All the passes have got, you know, quite a few snook. I'm still catching quite a few snook back up in the bays. I did really good catching quite a few snook in, you know, in the Bull and Turtle area and the north part of the sound. And even, I mean, I didn't catch any keepers on the east side, but I mean, I caught a number. No,
that really seems to be the truth of the matter is that the east side is loaded up with snook, but most of them are either small and a few oversized.
Yeah.
Slot fish are hard to find on the east side. The west side seems a little better. Up my cutoff is doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. But as you get down to Pine Island Sound, you're going to find more keeper fish.
Right. And last year was the opposite. Last year, the east side was loaded with big, pretty snook.
Yeah.
This time of year. Loaded. So, well, I mean, what it is it's one basic rule for everything. Fish follow food.
Well, not only that, but if last year we had a bunch of slot fish on the east side of the harbor, and that's where the majority of them were, people fish there, take out the slot fish, then they either get larger or have to wait to get into the slot. So the following year, it makes sense that you're going to see a place like Pine Island Sound, who the previous year had mostly undersized fish. Those fish are going to grow and hit the slot. And it's a cyclical thing, because we see it with the sheephead. We have that banner year, everybody's sheephead fishing. They're catching gazillions of them. The next year, it's not a good year, because not as many, we catch them during spawn. That's when they're spawning. So it slows down. And that year, many, many less people fish for sheephead. Few, they don't catch as many. Those spawn. The year after that is kind of decent season, but not great. And then the third year, it's another great season.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I mean, in 3 years, that works for sheephead. In 3 years, the math doesn't work for a snook.
In 3 years, it still works if you go place by place.
Right.
Everybody
place
goes
by
to
place,
one area.
But what people don't realize is... A snook
can go out of the snook season, out of slot in a year.
You know.
Truth. It's more likely to take them 2 to 3 years to get out of the slot, but in a year they
can go. If they're in the slot, the average, according to the FWC, the average age of a 30-inch snook, a 30-inch snook, okay, is 7.5 years. That's their average median age.
And which is true, but snook are like people. And goldfish. I've got a thing of goldfish in the back bin.
Exactly.
Some of them are 2 inches long. Some of them are almost 5 inches long.
I agree.
They're the same age. They were put in at the same time.
And that, again, that's food-based. A lot of it.
Genetics, well, too.
Yeah. You got fat people and skinny people.
Exactly. Now, you and I are pretty much same height, same general build.
But I'm much better looking.
Yes. But outside of you being better looking, we are the definitive of average white guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is true.
It's true. I mean, we're average build, average height, you know. I mean,
we're average.
We've got that same European base, you know. I mean, yeah. But then you look at somebody like Josh Greer. I mean, Josh is 7 foot.
Yeah,
he's 300
six,
pounds.
Six, seven. He's
and he's not near as old as I am. He's half my age, if that.
Yeah.
And yet he's twice my size.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing holds true with fish. You're going to have fish that outgrow its... are the
genetics.
7-year-old
Absolutely.
Slot fish.
Yep.
And then you're going to have guys that just are not, you know, they're 60 years old.
And they
they're
say
five
that
two.
If you... if say I went to the snook symposium, so I got all the data broke down, and I encourage people when they have a snook symposium, a redfish symposium, a trout symposium, guys, you want to learn some stuff, you need to go to them. It's really pretty cool.
I'm going to say add to your knowledge. Don't go there to learn. That's the wrong, to me, that's the wrong thing to do. Go there to add to your knowledge.
Oh,
because
exactly.
I don't believe eco-nuts. I don't believe marine biologists.
Oh,
because
no.
Over the last 10 years, and it maybe a little longer, you cannot get paid by the government unless you say, your hair is on fire, the world's ending, and they need to study this because it's a disaster.
Right.
Very few biologists are under contract with
a
regular paycheck where they can determine what's good, what's bad, and what's okay. There's Greg Palatka, Betty Stogler. These are people I will believe when they tell me stuff because, A, they're willing to listen to other viewpoints, but, B, they get the same paycheck whether things are good or whether things are bad.
Right.
Most biologists get their grants and get their funding because, oh, my God, the sky is falling. There's going to be nothing left in a couple years. We have to do this. So when you go to these symposiums, go there to get more data.
More data. More knowledge.
More knowledge. Don't go there to be smart. Because if you go there thinking what they're saying is the truth, it's still their interpretation of the truth.
I will tell you this much. What they're saying is absolutely not the truth on many, many levels. And I even stood up and went, I don't know where you're getting your data from for Charlotte Harbor, but it's freaking wrong. Because I'm out there every day, so I am obviously able to have observation that goes above and beyond.
Observational science is still a very important tool.
Right. So I'm able to have, observational data that goes above and beyond their data just from the number of days I spend out on the water.
Right.
You run 400 plus trips a year, you're going to know what's going on.
And that's why I say, where you said go there to learn, go there. That implies you're going to go there, and when you leave, you're going to have good, accurate information. I do not believe that.
Right.
I believe
you're
going to
have information.
More viewpoints on that information.
Exactly. You're going to have information. Whether it's good information or not is another story.
You need to accept people that you disagree with and people that you agree with and look at all of the viewpoints to say, okay. And as always, if this one says this is nothing but red and this one says it's nothing but blue, the truth is it's somewhere in purple in the middle.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle. I agree with that.
Always somewhere in the middle.
It's generally always somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. So
I will say as someone being out there all the time.
I guess that was political colors. I didn't even intend that.
Oh, easy.
That was not intentional. That was just... I knew that blue and red made purple. That was why I got to that. I could have used orange and blue to get green or something. I don't know. I just knew the colors. It wasn't political.
Let's not even get into politics. It's a fishing show.
Yeah, well, I'm into politics all the time because I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, it's horrible.
So, no, it's wonderful. It's funny. At least it's interesting.
Oh, it's interesting.
And I can tell you the best part about all this is you literally... For the first time as an adult, I understand what's going on. And you see who's getting paid to say what. Who's getting paid.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Who just repeats
Huge
the same
eye-opener.
Stuff. This
Huge.
Is the biggest eye-opener in history.
Huge.
Everyone.
It's awesome.
If you love the current administration or you hate them, you should at least
admire
be
that.
Thankful that we are now learning about what actually goes on. It's the first time we are actually getting an insight into stuff, for good, or better, or worse. And this is not an endorsement or a defamation.
I completely agree with that.
But it's the same thing with fish, and this is what we're talking about, is you have to learn what's going on, and do not take this person's word for it. Do not take that person's word for it. Because as I said a minute ago, the truth is in the middle somewhere.
It is in the middle somewhere.
You know me.
I lean, and this is not a political thing anyway. I lean to more conservative fishing view. I'm very conservation minded because, in my opinion, you can't have 40,000 people a month move to the state of Florida.
How many kids did you have?
I had two.
See, you're allowed that. Danny is allowed to sit here and say anything he wants about too many people out there because Danny is not part of the problem. He had two kids. I had three kids. I have to sit here and go, you're right, Dan. You're right. Okay. I'm not allowed to have an opinion on this because
it's not
you have more than two kids, you're part of the problem, not the solution.
Right. I agree with that. And I'm not saying that, but I'm saying let's change the whole, it's not a population, you know, the population's increasing, obviously, but let's change. I don't really care about that. They said that there's so many people moving to Florida to enjoy Florida because Florida's awesome. I was born here. I grew up here. I still live here,
and I've traveled
all over the world, and I still love this place.
And I still say that anybody who says, well, they shouldn't allow people to move here, I say, yes, right before you got here. Because I moved here because I like it. I think I've contributed to Florida. I think I've contributed to make things better. Some ways I've made things worse.
I hear people, you know, other captains bitching, oh, there's so many people on the water. This sucks. Da, 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 da. And then in the same sense, man, I've never ran so many charters. Hey, bud, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
The whole thing about it is there's room for all of us. One thing I think that's important for people to understand, there's a different perspective of personal space in Southwest Florida than there is in, say, New York City or Boston.
Oh, yeah.
When you have a high population and a high concentration of people in an area, the thing, personal space is a much smaller thing. We're much less populated, or at least we were. We're in a group, we stay pretty much almost at arm's lengths from each other.
Oh, yeah.
Very seldom do you see a group of people down here where they're standing like shoulder to shoulder unless it's for like a picture. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you're out in a boat up north, you can be 20 feet apart and that's considered far enough. Down here, it's 100 feet apart.
Oh, on the water?
On the water.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is one of the things people up north don't get when they come down to Florida, the difference in personal space. And I think a lot of them mean to be rude or mean to be a lot of things. I think they're just, what they're used to is different than what we have here. And we do not want to become like you have up there. I love it up there. New Jersey is one of my favorite states in the world. I think it's incredibly awesome. I love fishing the shore. I love the Lake Hopatcong and all the other lakes up in that whole area. New York is awesome. I mean, these places are amazing, but they're different than here. We have different sets, different ways
etiquette,
of thinking.
Our fishing That's etiquette the word. Is much, much different here. I go out of my way not to run by people.
Remember when I almost ran you over that one day coming out between the islands?
Yeah, if I see people fishing an area, you know what I mean? I try not. I mean, I don't know if that guy going to move on down the shoreline. What is he? I mean, I try not to. I'm not saying I don't make mistakes because sometimes I do. But I never intentionally try to.
You ever notice
cut somebody off or doing
being discourteous is always what that guy did, never what you did.
I ran onto
your fish and blew those fish up.
It
was not intentional
I
by any stretch.
I came around the corner the other day, not the other day, about a month ago, month and a half ago, and I couldn't see him. He couldn't see me. But I came around the corner cutting between two islands and I ran right past him.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, my bad. I didn't see it. I didn't do it intentionally, you know. And I said, oh, sorry. And he goes like this. You know, I knew who it was.
Right.
You know, it's another charter captain. He knows I didn't see him. You know, and I called him later and said, hey, bud, I'm sorry. He goes, man, you didn't see me. He goes, I knew you were coming. I could hear you. You know, so I'm like, sorry, man. I hope I didn't mess you up. He goes, nah, we weren't catching much anyway. So, I mean, it was fine. But, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. But there's a difference between when, you know, somebody's sitting there fishing a point and you see them for 500 yards and you proceed to drive 50 feet from them.
Yeah.
Why?
And you have the whole world to go to.
Yeah,
why? Shore Harbor's miles
and
miles across.
The middle of the bay is the funniest thing, and I don't know what it is, but I will be out there tarpon fishing or doing whatever. I will be the only boat on the harbor, and there will be a boat 3 miles away, and I'll go, watch, that guy's going to drive 100 yards from us.
Minimum.
And they drive straight at your boat. Go right by your boat and then turn to go wherever the heck they were going.
What?
When I just laugh. It's human nature.
When I was doing... No, it's not. it's this area of nature. The most amazing thing, and this is a big shout out for Jacksonville, I ran into one of the rudest boaters I've ever met up there, but 99.95% of the people in Jacksonville and the people on the St. John's River are the most courteous, best behaved, informed boaters I've ever seen in my life. You can go on the St. John's up there and be working on a barge, big work barge, you know, booms up in the air, pilings hanging, stuff, and they will go as far away from you as they can possibly get. I had been fishing there and had people go way around me to avoid me. Been working there doing barges and stuff and watch people go around me. I come to Southwest Florida and they use me as a channel marker.
Yeah.
Literally, I'll be anchored up out there and it's like I'm a channel marker. It's they see something and instead of driving to avoid it, they drive to it.
It's crazy.
And it's a phenomenon to this area. I thought it was Florida-wide. It is not. It is to this area. It is to our bad, our local. This is a deficit in our character here. I'm telling you, it's true. And you know how I love this area.
It ain't me,
I am
bud.
The biggest fan of Southwest Florida, probably in history. I promote it. I love it. But that's a flaw.
Look, I see somebody fishing. I don't go mess with them at all.
No. Okay, so we've kind of talked all about everything, almost including fishing. Mm-hmm. So what kind of fish are available out there right now?
You know, the rain really changed things. I'm seeing a lot of redfish for a change, because before the rain, I really was not seeing crap. And I shouldn't say a lot. I'm seeing some schools of redfish, and they're good-sized schools. You know what I mean? They're not, but they're 100 fish, 200 fish.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're decent schools, and they've been relatively hungry. The snapper fishing's still good after the rain. Tarpon, I don't know if they all ran, not all of them ran offshore, because I saw quite a few yesterday, but I'm not seeing quite the numbers I was seeing before.
Lightning.
Before the rain, I think what happened, a lot
lightning
of them ran offshore,
thunder.
and they're gonna make their way back in, because there's plenty of stinking food. It ain't a food shortage, bud.
I think if you went 40, 50 miles out in the Gulf or 60 miles, I think you'd see them all potted up out there. And
they should be on their way back in by now. It's been quite a few days since
the
storm.
There's going to be quite a few come back in.
Yeah.
But we had this phenomenon in the last couple of years where
you get those
a few
storms
of the boats,
they
went way out, and they're out there, you know, in...
And if they find something to eat, they'll stay out there.
Yeah, 60, 70 miles out. And they're just pot after pot of tarpon, just acres of them.
If they find something to eat, they'll stay out there. If they can eat, they'll stay out there, you know. But I think you'll see a bunch coming in. I'm gonna go.
I think you're right. I think they'll
be
here.
Tomorrow I'm fishing the Boca Grande area, so I may poke into the pass for a little bit and go give it a look-see.
Can you give me a call tomorrow after you get off the water?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me know what's going on.
Absolutely. If I see any tarpon. If I don't see any tarpon, it's going to be the same thing we're talking about now.
Yeah, well, you got a lot of snook trips planned?
You know what? Like I said, most of my clients are catch and release, and they just want to catch a bunch of fish. So if I catch, you know, obviously I target snook all the time because I love them. They're one of my favorites. And, if they catch big ones, they catch big ones. If they catch, because I mean, it's fun to sit there and catch 50 or 60, you know, 25 inch fish.
Right.
I mean, I don't care who you are, where you're from. It's
all right.
A ball.
Now, I got Rhett on my side on this, and the biologists are against me, but I've got a couple guys. I would like to see the snook laws go where you can't keep anything under 39 inches. I would like to see the same slot that we have now moved up from, what is it now? 28 to 33. So 5 inches. So I would like to see that slot move from 39, 40, 41, 42, 43.
Even 38 would be fine.
I would like to see it 39. Now, problem is once they hit 40, they start to go into the Gulf. At 40 inches, we lose a lot of these fish. They get in their Winnebagos, and they go to see the country. Those are the ones that will end up traveling. They go to the reefs.
Right.
They go all over the place.
But a lot of those fish, those aren't the truly, I mean, they're sexually mature, obviously, but those aren't your true, your spawn potential on a 25 pounder, you know, 40 incher, is not as high as it is on a 12 pounder. A 12 pounder is like, it's like a 20 year old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's what I
they are fertile myrtles.
I have said this to the biologists, say, well, the old snook have more eggs. Yes, but just like old people, they pass on more genetic defects.
Exactly. Old crappy eggs.
They're not as viable as the younger ones. That's why nature takes the old and weak.
Absolutely love to see that. That would be absolutely awesome, because then you would be able to pull up with so many.
And we would be catching 40, 50, 39-inch fish.
Yeah, you'd be catching. Think about it. Instead of pulling up there like me saying catching a bunch of 25-inchers, they'd be pulling up there catching a bunch of 35-inchers.
That's what I'm saying. Why are we doing this the wrong way? I'm going to argue. I'm going to lobby Tallahassee to change this law. I mean, it's for the betterment of everybody.
I have no problems with that one. And it's hard to catch them.
They're harder to catch.
It's harder to catch that one. So you'll have more fish.
You'll have more fish. Now, 100% get through this stupid, ridiculous slot.
Let me ask you a question here. What about a redfish season?
I think a sensible redfish season. It wouldn't make a bit of difference, really.
I disagree.
I think it would be okay. I'm not against it. When I was here in the time that I got here, there was nobody catching redfish. I have thousands of Polaroids that we're putting up on the ceiling. There's like two people with redfish for first 10 years I worked here. Then the redfish, black and redfish crazed, and that all changed. Nobody targeted redfish, including you back then. You caught them like everybody else, but we didn't target them. They weren't a game fish, which is fact. Now, there was snook, trout, cobia, tarpon, stuff like that. So when the redfish craze came on, we had no redfish left here. We were not allowed to keep any for several years, and they started coming back. And then the law was that when snook was in, redfish was out. During snook season, redfish was closed. When snook was closed, redfish was in. Then they went to the one per day. This is fact.
There
was only a couple of years.
It had to be like 1 year.
No, it was a few years they had that.
They had a redfish season.
You were not allowed to keep them for a long time.
Right, well, I mean, the whole time I was a kid, it was shut down.
When they first brought redfish back to allow you to keep them, when snook was open, redfish was closed.
See, I don't remember that part.
That's a fact.
That was right when I...
That was before you were chartering.
Right, it was before I was chartering. Yeah, that was when I was in high school.
You were probably in high school then, yeah. And
I don't remember that.
I'm a wee bit older than you, but because when I met, I'm like 10, 15, 20 years old or something. I don't know.
40.
But, who knows. But that, to me, if they wanted to close it during the fall snook season, I wouldn't be against it.
That's what I'm talking about. Here's what I'm proposing.
But
why
would I agree to that? Because that is during the spawn.
Thank you. Why are we killing something during its spawn?
Well, we do it to sheephead. We do it to crappie. We do it to a whole bunch of other fish. So that has nothing to do with it.
But if
you were going to get me on your side for it, that would be a argument in its favor, but not the reason I would say yes.
So I am saying what I would propose, because, again, it goes back to so many more people moving here, so many more people enjoying the resource, so many more people keeping the fish.
No, it goes to red tide, Danny.
And the red tide was huge.
The red tide hitting during spawning season, year after year after year, is why we have the problem.
It's why we have the problem.
It has nothing to do with closed season. It has nothing to do with tournaments. It has nothing to do with anything.
Well, that's not true. It's just a piece of the pie.
Yeah, but you're talking such a small slice. You're talking 2% here.
It's still a piece of the pie, though.
Okay, that if you added up all those pieces, you got 10% of the pie. All of them put together.
10% of a million fish is a lot of fish.
Okay.
10% of 100,000 fish is a lot of fish.
That's the tournaments, the people, all this.
I agree,
that's
10%, but what I'm saying is, look, do a sensible 3 month season: September, October, November, right around there, or even August, September, October.
No, September, August should not be included in it because there's no reason for it.
Right.
Fishing's at the lowest.
That's what I'm thinking. September, October, November. Right there, that's the spawn.
I can go with that. We have Snook to go play with.
Yeah.
I would go along with that. I don't believe it would do any good.
I think it would. I think it would.
It might do a little bit.
It would do.
A little bit.
The only reason I'm saying
we're not allowed to keep the ones that are spawning anyway.
Well, I'm personally watching people go out, get a limit, go back in, go out, get another limit, go back in.
Yeah.
Go back out and get another limit. Go back in because they're schooled up.
So, yeah, I'll go along with it because of poaching, and that's poaching.
That's poaching. You can't stop a poacher. A poacher's going to poach no matter what.
So, I'll go along with you on the poaching aspect
Let me ask you another one. What about a very small trout season, again, during their spawn?
We always had trout were closed in the fall, but the problem is they found out that trout spawn all year. It's not.
Yeah, but not when the big ones. Not. I mean, think about it. When you catch most of your giant.
They close trout October, November for several years.
November, December.
So
for years.
For years it was closed. It didn't do any good. So
I don't know. Since they opened it. See, here's the thing. When they opened up the season, they increase the commercial take and increase the commercial limit.
See,
and since they've opened the season,
if they're
going
to stop the commercial take during those months, I'm on board. But if they're not going to stop the commercial take, no.
I think it should be declared a sport fish, trout.
I don't know why trout wouldn't be a sport fish.
It needs to be declared a sport fish.
Because most of it's exported anyway. When's the last time you saw sea trout on a local menu?
Exactly.
I know.
When's the last time you saw mullet on a local menu?
Well, mullet gets a bad rap because it goes along with the guy who thought that the water level in the Gulf was going to be raised an unsafe level.
I agree.
They see a sign for bait, they see a sign for smoked, and they think that's all they can do with it.
Right.
If they bothered to learn about it, it's one of the most wonderful tasting fish in the world.
Right.
Nothing is, as long as it's filleted properly.
Right. And if people ask what a mullet tastes like, it tastes like mullet. You're either going to love it or you're not.
Yeah.
It's just like any other fish. I think snook is overrated for me personally. You know, just because it's got a season on it, you got to at least be, oh, snook tastes like lobster. Whatever. I could put a season on this ashtray and somebody be like, oh, ashtray tastes like lobster. It's awesome.
I don't like lobster, by the way. I don't eat lobster.
You know?
I cannot develop a taste for it.
You know?
And
but you get my point.
It could be because I've worked with shrimp. And, you know, if
what you mean you don't eat shrimp, Frank?
You know, walk into this place one morning when the power went out and there's 6,000 dead shrimp in the tanks that have been dead for hours.
And it's June.
And then inside, the temperature in the store, because with no power, no fans, no pumps running, that water is 90 or 100 degrees. And then you get to take all those and sort them out. And then
smells like my live oil when my bubbler goes bad.
Oh, man. I can still eat shrimp, but I just can't develop a taste for lobster. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah. It's like anything else. I mean, I do like lobster, but I like it in moderation. You know what I mean?
I can eat it.
Yeah.
You know, but
I do enjoy it, but I'm not. It's like scallops. You know, my family and I, we go scalloping quite a bit.
I can eat scallops. I'm just not big on.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's personal taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's personal taste, like anything.
I mean,
you know,
we went to this restaurant, Delmonico's, up in Orlando,
mm-hmm.
and they have a Delmonico steak. It was like going back 30 years in time. It was the best steak I've had in 25 years. Wow. I will drive to Orlando. Every time I'm driving near there, I'm going to swing in and buy one of those steaks. To me, though, I guess because I grew up Midwest, you know, beef country, cattle country.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I developed my taste buds.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I love crappie. I love bluegill. If I'm having a campfire on a stick and I've got some good maple or hickory ashes to sprinkle on it, and even oak ain't too bad, but hickory or maple ashes, you know, where you could just sprinkle a little bit of the ashes, hang the fillet over the fire, and, you know, with skin on it and eat it off of there. That's bluegill.
Old school like my dad now.
Oh, me and your dad, we, you know.
Old school like my dad.
Freshwater trout, not a big fan of unless I'm 14,000 feet in the top of a volcano bowl, because that's above tree line, by the way. That's why I made it very clear. This is in the top of a volcano bowl, on, you know. I love it when I'm up in the mountains and I'm cooking it over a campfire, and I either somebody packed us in a
it's fresh. You caught it right then, right there.
Yeah, I catch it right there, eat it right there. That to me is amazing,
and
wonderful
that's a good
meal.
And that's what, you know what I mean. I do that with a lot of my clients. What we do is a lot of my, you know, especially this time of year when it's so hot, is a lot of my clients, when they book a full day trip, what they want to do is they want to go. You know, let's catch 4, 5, 6 snapper or whatever. Or let's catch a couple trout. Let's catch a redfish. Let's go to the Lazy Flamingo or Waterside or Miller's,
where they'll cook it for you.
But all three of those restaurants do a wonderful job, by the way. Yeah. They do a wonderful job. And
Luigi's in town here, by the way, does that too.
Who does?
Luigi's.
Luigi's a cook your catch now?
Oh, yeah. They always have.
Really?
All the guys from Penn came to, you know, we have that big tent sale. You've worked many times. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the guys go out on charters, but they never get to eat the fish because they don't know what to do with it, and they don't have time, they don't have a place to cook it. During the tent sale, it's very common for the guys to bring all their fish over to Luigi's, and they cook them up in several different fashions.
Cool.
And
cool.
We've had dinners over there with, you know, literally dozens of people where the main meal was the fish they caught.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
But it's not on the water.
It's
not on the water.
I love the Piedmonts anyway. They're awesome.
No. What you're talking about, if I'm out on the water, the Lazy Flamingo, I know those people. I like those people a lot. They're awesome down there.
They're wonderful. I'll tell you, Frank, the water side over there at Gasparilla Marina right there, they do a really pretty good job, too.
Now, I've gotten to know them a little bit more over the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
I do like those people a lot. I like the grill. I enjoyed the food. I've eaten there like 3 times now.
Yeah.
Every time was good. I don't have anything bad to say about it. I have not been to Miller's since the whole controversy thing came up.
You know,
I used to go to Miller's all the time.
Right.
So
you haven't been there the last 4 or 5 years. Basically.
Yeah, ever since the whole Save the Tarpon stuff was going on. I wasn't welcome on Gasparilla Island.
You know, Miller's really wasn't.
They weren't part of it, but it's still
me going
there.
The Boca Grande thing, yeah.
Yeah,
I know, you'd be fine.
I was fine because I went there because I didn't care.
Since the last time you've been there,
I did not want to go there to disrupt somebody's business.
Exactly.
Because I don't care where I go. If you want a piece of me, come on.
Yeah, but I mean, why?
I won't do it now.
Yeah,
now
exactly.
I'm going to say, no, leave me alone.
Whatever.
I just had all this dental work done.
Yeah.
You can say anything you want. I'm not getting upset. I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to turn tail and walk away because nobody's worth the money I put in my mouth. I just had all these teeth fixed.
I'm an
official wuss as of this moment. Yes. So anyway.
They're officially?
Officially a wuss of this moment. I'm just.
As of this moment?
Yes.
20 years ago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's true, too. Okay. So anyway, go ahead.
But Miller's has stepped up the game. They've done really well in the last 4 or 5 years. If you guys really want to go, the Lazy's still my favorite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the one on north end of Pine Island, Boquilla.
North end of Pine Island, Boquilla. It's right by Four Winds Marina.
Yeah. Because you pull in there, you can walk right up, get a great meal.
Well, there's a cleaning table right there.
I've had the black and the tuna there, the ahi.
Oh, it's phenomenal. That
was spectacular.
Yeah, all of it's phenomenal. They do a really, really good job with everything. But it's just a cool way to break the day up with the clients, you know, and
oh, absolutely.
And do something. They love it. And it's got to be the client who wants to go do that, obviously. But it's a really cool thing. And for just going out with your wife, I take my wife and kids. I don't have a choice. I'm going to the Lazy Flamingo. It's just is what it is.
I go into Cabbage Key quite a bit when I have people in from out of state.
Yeah, Cabbage's Tarpon Lodge is good.
The Tarpon Lodge is very, very good. Cabbage Key, just because it sits up on the hill and the dollar bills
and
all that. The food is okay.
Right. Have you been to the museum on Yuseppa since they opened that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Anybody who wants to get it, I mean, that place has got a lot of history, and the view is absolutely gorgeous. You can eat at the restaurant. They're going to give you a spiel for the Yuseppa Island Club, which isn't a bad deal. It's just if you want to do it. But if you get a chance to go to the museum, you ought to go check it out. It's really pretty cool. A lot of history. A lot of history about sport fishing. A lot of famous people have stayed there. That island, mm-hmm. I mean, it's got a lot of history. Really cool.
I know people.
Eye-opening.
One of the guys who used to work here used to stay down there, Yuseppa and Mondongo, back in the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the 40s.
That had to be amazing.
And that's back when they were rowing people out to go fishing.
Right,
and, you know,
right. Back in the, and so. there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that in the museum, how they talk about that. It's really cool.
So, yeah, there's, I mean, one thing I am is a huge fan of history. Because to me, if I know where I am now, but if I don't know where I've been, I'm bound in a turn. Most people will walk in a circle and end up right where they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I love history because the more about history you know, the more you can.
Oh, absolutely.
The better you are at planning on where you're going.
Right.
If you want to know where you're going, you have to know where you've been.
Where you've been.
So
I agree.
I've studied the history of this area all the way back into the 1500s. I know where the Confederate line was. I know where the only Civil War battle fought here was. I know where the last Indian battle was. I know where the Indian encampments were. I know more than the actual government knows about the Indian encampments because I was here to see when they covered it all up so they could build over it.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh yeah.
You know. We know the history.
You need to go to it then. All you gotta do is call them up and say, hey, I'd like to go to the museum. And or even you could pull up there probably. I mean, at this time of year, and they wouldn't have a problem. But if you're going to go in like March when it's busy, you know, just give them a call and say, hey, I'd like to go see the museum, and I'll be there at 11 o'clock. And you can pull right up. They'll let anybody go see it. You know what I mean?
And yeah, I'll go out and check it out.
Yeah, you want to go check it out. It's really cool.
I'll do a page on
it.
It really is. I just got done building several pages. And which, if you wouldn't mind helping me sometimes, if you get pictures of different areas or. Things that are, you know,
unique.
Points. No, not so much unique. More common okay. points. Like if you're there at Captiva Rocks on a low tide, and you got some things so people know. That way, I like to build pages about
areas.
Not the uniqueness, but the common.
Yeah.
The things that allow us to get around and understand and say the same things.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I build pages for. I do creeks that I do islands and stuff. So we all speak the same language. We know the same stuff. And that's why I build all these web pages. Because I don't think you could fish every web page I've got up so far. And I'm going to be building hundreds more going all the way down south. But one of the things about that I try and do by building these is build common knowledge of good common spots to allow people and throw in a little etiquette on it. You know, it's a way for all of us to be on the same page.
Etiquette. You know, you see somebody fishing, don't idle up there with your big motor. If you see somebody fishing,
you know,
leave them the heck alone. Don't try to fish the same fish there are. Nothing drives me crazy. I'll be on a flat, you know, fishing a group of redfish or whatever, just because I'm not on an island and all of a sudden it's like a free-for-all.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, dude, what is the difference of me being here or me being on that point? Because for some reason, the etiquette on a sandbar is totally different than the etiquette on a shoreline. They won't cut you off on a shoreline.
As much.
Just, well, I don't know where I just crank up, blow everything out, and leave anymore. You know, but, I mean, if you're out on a sandbar or in the middle of a flat, I mean, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, I can go cast right over your line. I mean, it's
yeah,
crazy.
But it's crazy. These are more the things that, you know, I write on one of the spots I've got on how you chum. And if somebody's fishing, you do not anchor down their chum line, because
don't
that's
block
ridiculous
their chum
rude.
Line. That's bad.
If you go,
even when
if you see
bait.
Somebody fishing, you go to the left or to the right of them in line with them, and then your chum will add to theirs, and luck of the draw starts coming in. But you don't get in front of their chum line.
Right. My number one pet peeve is don't get downwind of me and cut me off.
Exactly. Down current,
you know, whatever. If I'm working a school of tarpon down the beach, don't go park your boat 100 yards up the beach, right where you think they're gonna go, and then jump on my school of fish. Oh, they came to me. No, they didn't. You put your boat in position to where they came to you. You know what I mean? Go find your own school. Go catch your own fish. You can do it. It's just gonna be, you're gonna have to take the hour to find them, like I did.
Right.
You know. So I mean, it's just doing to others is basically I try to fish, you know, and you're gonna.
I think you'll find most people outdoors may not be particularly religious, but they're very particularly spiritual.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that most of the people, once you're outside and you spend a lot of time outdoors,
you appreciate it.
will you learn that there's a lot more to all this, be it spiritual or physical, part of the world, that you're a part of it, and you can either be part of it, or you can try and fight against it, which isn't going to work.
Which isn't going to work. For me...
You've got to learn your place in it.
Right.
And
it's the same with fishing.
There's a little bit of spirituality in that. It's understanding the fish, understanding the water, understanding the weather, becoming part of the whole thing. That's where we try to fit in. That's where you fit in.
All right.
That's what I try to do.
Well, that's my thing. See, I get more joy out of, like, finding a group of fish and then trying to figure that group of fish out. You know what I mean? And be like, okay, this is where that group of fish wants to be. Or this is where I need to cast. Or this is the lure I have to use to catch them. Whatever. Whatever I have to figure out to catch them. That's the fun part for me. That's what makes... If fish always did the same thing, we're in the same spot every day, I'd be bored out of my mind.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But now, it's that. But so, I mean,
can back you hold
to the
that,
etiquette
can
thing.
You hold
I'll work
that,
my tail
hold
off
that
for
thought
3 days.
For just a minute. Hold that thought for just a second. This is the same guy, Captain Danny Latham, who experimented around and found out if you put a paper towel on a hook and drag it through redfish, they will hit it.
They will eat it.
They will eat it.
They will eat it. I don't...
Remember that?
Oh yeah, I put it on. Facebook. I mean, it was
awesome.
I've had them get so charged up they'll eat a cigarette butt.
Yeah, on a paper clip.
Oh, it's just paper towel. Yeah. I mean, that's the cool stuff. I mean, that's what makes what I do so much fun. One of the coolest things I've seen. I really wish I'd have videotaped it, but the morning wasn't that great tarpon fishing with these guys, and I was working my tail off right at the end of the trip. Come around the corner, I see a few birds, I shut down, and there's a ball of glass minnows. You know what I mean? It's those red minnows. I mean,
right.
And it's a good sized ball. It's probably 30 feet round, 40 feet round, which is pretty big.
Big ball, baby.
You know what I mean? Frank, they're up there slurping. You know how they slurp.
Right.
They're rolling over the top of each other like koi. I'm not joking. A tarpon would hit, and another one would hit right over his head and slide over his back. And there's probably a dozen of them doing this, and every once in a while one would do the full breach thing, you know, where they just come all the way, you know, half their body
right.
comes out and glass minnows go flying everywhere. And I was just sitting there, I'm like, that is so stinking cool. That's so cool. I don't care how many times I see it or whatever, that is just cool. And of course, you know, I'm trying to catch my, you know, get my client, you know, tarpon. They got a double out of it, but I really wish I'd have video
when
just
you're sitting
that.
There, the hard part to remember is take pictures, catch fish. You're so involved in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, to me, one of the coolest things about what we get to be, who we get to be, where we get to do it, and that is to be able to go out and become part of these moments, even as just a spectator.
I would have been perfectly content just sitting there watching.
Yeah. I mean, and then all of a sudden... time goes by. I mean, it becomes kind of a suspended moment, and then all of a sudden you kind of snap out of it and you go, okay, I got to catch these fish, I got to do this, I got to do that.
Yeah, but that's just,
we go
I mean,
back into you know, that mode. But for that moment you literally get absorbed in it, and it just fills every bit of you.
Oh, exactly. You know, and after we hooked the fish, you know, in hindsight, I'm going, that was so friggin' awesome. I really wish I'd have been able to video that and show people just how cool that is.
You
it's
know,
like, you know, and
I will tell you, I'm almost glad we forget to do that, because during the eclipse, I stopped at Tractor Supply for $39. I got this very cool welding helmet. It was, you know, went to 13, which was what they said was perfect.
All
not
right.
too bright, not too dark. And I was standing in the parking lot throughout almost all the eclipse, and I had everybody who was working at the store, and almost everybody showed up that day. We're all out in the parking lot checking out the eclipse, and every customer who came by, people... I went and got everybody from the other businesses here and all that, made sure everybody got to see it. And there was a kid standing at the counter. He says, I saw it on TV. I said, get your ass out in the parking lot. Come on. And he's like, what? I said, you're coming with me. And he's like, but no. Took him out, put the helmet on him, and made him look. And he didn't even know to look up. as we're looking for the sun, and he's looking at the ground. I can't see anything. Look up. And he saw the eclipse in person by himself. He couldn't believe how amazing it was, because he saw it on TV and he thought, okay, that's it. And
TV doesn't do it justice.
And that's kind of where I'm with you on the video.
Yeah, I agree. It won't do it justice, but
it would bring your memory back.
Right. It would just be one of those things where, you know what I mean? Like it's funny you brought up the paper towel redfish thing, because I just watched that this morning while I was working on my website, you know, and I'm doing some stuff and I just, it just happened to pop up and be right there, and I went click. I went, that was such a cool day, you know. Right. I mean, it's just little things like that. But I will tell you this much, you know.
Well, we've been going on here for a bit. So tell me the name of your website.
It's real, R-E-E-L, fishing.com.
Okay, now go back to what you were saying.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, just seeing just bringing back memories like that. That's what pictures and that kind of stuff are for. It's just cool.
Yeah, I've been trying for the last couple of years to get our pictures up. I'm fully intend on having that done by the first of the year. All those old Polaroids.
You scanned them all?
Some of them are scanned, some of them are not. But at this point, I'm not going to be able to scan them all. I've got somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 pictures to go up.
And you got pictures of me when I was like 12.
Yeah.
Short shorts and butterfly collars.
Red shorts. Red gym shorts. Yeah, I know that. I remember that picture well.
I had me a big old bass, though, didn't I, bud?
Oh, absolutely. It's the one thing. I walked in the door here 33 years ago, and I've known Danny since the first or second year I worked here.
Oh, at least, yeah.
And, you know, it's hard for people who are not in the fishing community to understand. I have people that I see, because I see you every once in a while. I mean, we see each other fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got other guys that I only see a couple times a year, once a year, every other year.
Yeah.
But we still feel very close to each other, because we all have lives, and lives get in the way of all this other kind of stuff.
Of course.
I don't think you need to be in always contact to be close with somebody. But we have a history. I ran into Bo Johnson the other day, who I've probably only seen 10 times in my life. But we always have this special friendship, special kindred, because, A, we always got accused of being each other. People come up to me and go, Bo, and I'm like, no, wrong one. I'm Frank. Bo's the guy in Pine Island.
Wrong mullet.
Yeah, wrong mullet. That was it. Wrong mullet.
That would be the haircut, by the way.
Yes. So, anyway. But I guess we're going to get this wrapped up. Any final words for everybody?
No, just go out and fish and have a good time, guys. Remember, it's about the experience, you know?
It is about the experience and being able to be part of it.
Exactly.
So, Fishing Frank here, Captain Danny Latham, his logo and all that, you'll be able to click that, go right to his website, as we always do on the program here. So, thank you much, Danny. Fishing Frank here saying we will, I don't know if we're going to get another show in today, but tomorrow, Friday, we're back with the Area Fishing Report. We've got the Law Enforcement Edition with FWC. It's going to be an awesome show. Listen to the Law Enforcement one. At least I think it will. I'm pretty sure it's going to be awesome. We're going to find out what the actual rules of possession are on snook. So that's all coming place tomorrow. We'll talk to you later. Fishing Frank. Bye.